Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome to the 336th episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I am your host today, Patrick Winograd. In this edition, our topics are a review of my weekend predictions, a quick look at the CFP, a look at the NFL playoffs, our weekly look at the NBA, and of course, a recap of the past week in college basketball. So let's jump right in with a look at my weekend predictions in college football. In the only game there was, I went 1-0. In the NFL, I went 4-0, bringing me to 10-0 for the postseason, so pretty happy about that. Get into that more later. And then in college basketball, I went 2-2. In the NBA, I went 2-2, which means that overall, I went 9-4 this week, a 1,463-922 overall record, a 61.3% winning percentage. And going back to the top, of course, Indiana beat Miami. That was my prediction. We will do our in-depth, or I guess I will do our in-depth review of that game in a second. So not going to say too much there. But in the NFL, we'll also have that review in a second too, but the Broncos beat the Bills, which I predicted correctly. The Seahawks beat the 49ers. The Patriots beat the Texans, and the Rams beat the Bears in overtime, which I predicted correctly. Two overtime games this weekend, though, so could have gone either way. The other two, not so much. And then in college basketball, Virginia beat SMU on the road, which I got wrong. Florida beat Vanderbilt on the road, which was a big upset. Got that one wrong as well. And then Georgia beat Arkansas at home. Texas Tech beat BYU at home. Both of those ranked versus ranked matchups. Florida, by the way, was number 19. Vanderbilt number 10 heading in that matchup. Number 21, Georgia. Number 17, Arkansas. Then number 15, Texas Tech over number 11, BYU. So overall, happy in college basketball. Had two, really, the games that I picked, had two losses that were both two possession games, 4-point losses each. And then the two games that I predicted that were wins were both double-digit wins, although Texas Tech BYU was a lot closer than that final score indicates. Really, BYU was controlling most of the game, but that's a different story. Then in the NBA, I went 2-2 as well, as I said earlier. The Celtics beat the Heat 119-114, and the Pistons beat the Suns 108-105. Those are my two correct predictions of the week. And then the Warriors beat the Knicks 126-113, and the Rockets beat the Timberwolves 110-105. Those were the games that I got wrong. So overall, pretty satisfied with the week. Obviously, I've had football predictions kind of carrying me, for lack of a better word, for the last few weeks. So it would be nice if I could get the college basketball back in the order that it was last week. I think in college basketball and in the NBA, I went 3-1 last week. So if I could just get back to that level, obviously, no issues without as many football games going forward in terms of keeping that record up. And then also we'll probably have some Australian Open predictions in there this week as well. Just not enough in the early rounds to really, not enough meaningful games, to be quite honest, or meaningful matches in the first few rounds to really send them in on predictions. Also, the draw came out pretty late Wednesday night, so hard to turn those around for Thursday, in all honesty. But this weekend, I think it'll be the third round, maybe some second round matches as well. So probably we'll have predictions for that too next week. But again, be sure to look out for those predictions again next week. Now we will move on to a review of the national championship game. In that national championship game, it was Indiana who comes out on top, 27-21. Obviously, for anybody who watched the game, it was an interesting first half. Really took a while for this game to pick up with the action. You know, you look at 27-21, you assume that, there was some scoring back and forth either way, but really, that wasn't the case. 24 of the 48 points of the game were scored in the fourth quarter. Indiana had a 10-0 lead at the half. Their defense was playing lights out. Their offense had figured some things out, but not enough to really sustain many drives. I think for the first portion of this game, it was kind of just a field position game for the most part, where Indiana got down the field, they kicked their field goal. But beyond that, Miami pinned them deep a few times. They'd get a first down, maybe a penalty, something like that. And then a good punt, and all of a sudden Indiana would have it backed up, but couldn't do much with it. And then really, this game opened up a ton in that second half, had Indiana going for it on fourth down a few times. Obviously, the most notable one, Fernando Mendoza's scramble for a touchdown on the fourth and five. But really, some interesting, I mean, just a great way to cap off the season, I think is the best way to describe it. Mark Fletcher came up big for Miami by the end of the game, had some trouble getting it going in the beginning. And really, that was true for all of the Miami offense. But in the third quarter, obviously down 10 to nothing, 57-yard touchdown run for Fletcher really got the Canes going. And then Indiana's blocked punt touchdown basically ended up being the big difference in the game. But that was definitely a big story that, that blocked punt definitely swung the momentum back in Indiana's favor when it felt like Miami was starting to reclaim it for themselves. And then even after that, Miami's last three drives were touchdown and touchdown, and then the one at the end of the game that, of course, ended in the Carson Beck pick. But they were moving the ball by the end of the game, so that blocked punt turned into a big, big deal in this game. Obviously, Miami's defense stepping up at the very end of the game, getting that field goal by or getting Indiana to settle for a field goal as opposed to scoring a touchdown when they were trying to run out the clock. Yes, Miami only got it back with, a minute and a half left or so, but they did a good job to get off the field because obviously if they had given up that first down, the game ends there. So they did a great job of working their way back into this game. It's just that it was just a little bit too late, just the slightest bit too late. I mean, really, it was close. It really was close to one of the best comebacks I've really seen in a playoff game. But unfortunately, it was not to be, which means that Indiana caps off the first 16-0 season in college football history, which is just, I mean, it's insane. We've talked about, I think everybody has talked about this in the country. This was the losingest program in the country until this year. And not only just until this year, until like week three or four this year. And obviously last year, they weren't even really that close to it. It took the great season they had last year and an undefeated record this year to climb out of that hole. And all of a sudden, Indiana doesn't look like they're going to go back down there anytime soon, the way that Kurt Cignetti has this group rolling and obviously looking great into next year, with the great transfer class coming in and still a lot of good returners. They're going to send some guys to the NFL, of course, mainly Fernando Mendoza, who will probably be the first overall pick. We'll see if that holds true, but that's kind of the thought out there right now. But Indiana, they're still set up for a lot of success in the future. And in general, I mean, this is just a crazy season that they went on. I really, it's hard to find words to describe just how special this team was. And I think that a lot of things that people would say about this team, they're not going to say it because the brand name just isn't that big. I mean, last year, people were still talking about Ohio State's title many, many weeks, months after. They talked about how they were going to be number one heading into this year, because of the fact that they had such a great title team, and that team lost two games. This Indiana team didn't lose. I mean, last year they also lost two games. Obviously, they lost way earlier in the playoffs than the Buckeyes did, but they didn't get any of that kind of hype returning into this year. People didn't think this was a playoff team heading into the year, and of course, they end up with a dominant 16-0 season. But when you look at the things that they've done over the course of the season, anything that you've asked them to do, they've done. They took care of their, bad opponents. They beat them by 50 plus every single game. They really announced that they were here when they beat Illinois by 53, which was, I mean, looking back on it, Illinois is a 9-4 team that I think ended in the top 20 or at least near that in the final AP poll. So that's no slouch of a team, and they just bullied them. They obviously got the road win against Iowa. That was really, really tough. I mean, Oregon struggled to go beat Iowa on the road as well. Speaking of Oregon, they beat Oregon twice this season. They demolished them in the playoffs, and they already beat them on the road at Autzen at the beginning of the or in the middle of the season. So, look, regardless of what you want to say about this team, we have to think about the fact that they went 16-0, and they beat, at the time of the game, they played six teams that were top 10 teams, and they won all of them, and only two of them were by a possession. They beat Oregon by 10, they beat Illinois by 53. They beat Oregon the second time they played them by 34, and they beat Alabama by 35. So this was not a team that went out there and played a ton of close games. I mean, the closest games of the year were against Penn State, Ohio State, and Iowa. And everything else wasn't within a possession other than this Miami game in the national championship. So that's something that you don't see at all. And I think Indiana should deserve a lot of credit for that. I don't think necessarily, I don't think, comparing them to like the Joe Burrow 2019 LSU team is in store. I think that's a little bit too far. But I think it's hard to go undefeated. They've added more and more games to the season. It's getting progressively harder to go undefeated. And Indiana is here this year again to prove that, it might be getting harder, but it's definitely not impossible. And obviously Michigan only did that only 2 years ago too. So different playoff format though, of course. But it also means three straight titles for the Big Ten. So, all the SEC narratives you'd hope get put to bed, but probably not going to actually happen. I think by the time we reach not this point next year, but the start of the season next year, we'll still probably have four or five teams in the top 10 from the SEC, which makes no sense because none of them probably should be there based on what we saw this season. But it'll happen. It is what it is. I think that the Big Ten, though, this season proved that they are above the rest of the conferences. I mean, you don't win three straight national championships by chance, and you also don't do it with three different teams. I mean, it's not like this was just, a Georgia run where Georgia out of the SEC won two in a row, and then, say Alabama came in and won the year after, or, even like Alabama where they had won multiple times in a row, plenty of times before. This is three different teams. Coming from three different places. I mean, Michigan, obviously, when they won their title, had been to the playoffs the last 2 years, and it was their third time winning the Big Ten in a row before they finally won it all. But, Ohio State was in the playoff with Michigan 1 year. They didn't make it to the championship. That's when Georgia won in 22. But then since then, it's Michigan in the title game winning it. They were obviously playing a team that then joined the Big Ten next year, that being Washington. In the 12-team playoff era, you had Ohio State against an independent Notre Dame. Penn State was the team that lost in the semifinals that would have played Ohio State had they not lost to Notre Dame. So Big Ten teams have been knocking on the door and also kicking it down. And the SEC team's very underrepresented, excuse me, when you consider the kind of stature that they like to take about how much better they are than everybody else. But look, that's not to take away from this Indiana team at all. This is not, it's not just a Big Ten thing. This is a great team, as I said, when you look at everything that happened this season. They were dominant all year long, and I think they should be remembered as such. But that's all we have for this season. Obviously, we'll be very, very excited to go into the next offseason. I'll probably try to predict all the games again. We'll see if that happens again, but a goal of mine to get that done again. But now let's move on to the NFL, where, of course, it's also playoff action. I think far more entertaining games, frankly, in the NFL this week. Obviously helps that there was a huge quantity of games, even if the quality wasn't as good on an individual basis. But there were two overtime games this week, so let's start there. The Broncos beat the Bills 33-30 in overtime. Look, controversies galore in this game. I mean, there are so many different things that you can talk about that happened in this game that people are still up in arms about. Obviously, the biggest thing from this game is that Sean McDermott was fired after the game. He will not be coaching the Buffalo Bills moving forward, which is a big difference for that team. But the reality is, he's been there for 9 years and they have never even made the Super Bowl. And obviously, this has been a lot of the Josh Allen era. At some point, you got to get the guy that gets you over the hump. I think that the comparisons that people have made a lot are probably Andy Reid in Philly, where he was there for a while, but they never won the Super Bowl. They were very successful, but never quite got to the mountaintop. And that ended up being the sticking point and why he didn't stick around. And I think McDermott might be just like Andy Reid. He might go somewhere else and win a Super Bowl. And it doesn't mean that he should have been in Buffalo still. For both of them, I think a change of scenery isn't necessarily the worst thing. So, I'm not saying it's the wrong decision. I'm not saying it's the right decision. I think I really don't have a this is a wrong thing or this is a right thing to do. I think if they'd kept him on for next year, Could they have won the Super Bowl? Yeah, sure, why not? If they had not won the Super Bowl, could they have fired him at the end of next year? Also, yes. Would they probably have made the playoffs next year too? Yes. So I don't think it's going to be, a super, super consequential move. I think the reality is they just need to improve this roster, especially on the defensive end, and also get Josh Allen some more weapons. I mean, their receiving core is just not the level of a playoff team. That's not built basically off the back of a defense or a running game, which they do have a strong running game. But you look at their weapons out there, and the tight ends are good, but the receivers, I mean, they need a number one receiver. They really do. And that would be a big deal for Buffalo to get one of those. But then on the other end of things, you have the Broncos moving forward, but of course, moving forward with no Bo Nix. He injured himself on the last play or last real play of regulation, maybe even before that. A lot of people drawing different conclusions on when that injury happened, but Bo Nix will not be with the team for the rest of the season, no matter if that is just one more game or if that extends all the way to the Super Bowl, which makes a really interesting game next weekend, which of course will be against the Patriots. That's a home game for the Broncos, but the Patriots are favored by 5.5 in that one because the Patriots beat the Texans 28-16. Their defense looks very, very good, and right now, I mean, you got a team that gave up 3 points to Justin Herbert and 16 to CJ Stroud. Of course, bad weather in that second game, like really bad weather in that second game. But you're looking at that team and you're saying, how are they going to give up points to Jarrett Stidham? No offense to Jarrett Stidham, but he's only started, I think, 4 games in 7 years. He's been a career backup. That's not the situation you want to step into in the AFC Championship game. I think this game will be low scoring because the Patriots defense has been great and the Broncos defense has been great as well all season long. But I don't care that Drake May is going into his first career playoff road game. I think fully healthy, I'd probably lean the Broncos here and maybe would pick them. I actually don't know what I would have picked if this game was two teams at full strength. But I just think that injury is just it's so deflating for the Broncos. I think that the Patriots are going to be able to take that one home, and then moving on to the NFC, or I guess I could give a score prediction. I'd probably say, like, I don't know, 21-14, 20-14, something in that, 20-13, something in that range. I guess if I'm being official, I'd say 20-13, Patriots win. But in the NFC, two very, very different game styles, but both of the teams that were supposed to be here are the teams that ended up here. The Seahawks just demolished the 49ers. 41-6. The Seahawks scored more on the first in the first 15 seconds of the game, on the opening kickoff than the Niners did in the entire game. So there's that. I mean, there's not much to break down here. The fact of the matter is, the Seahawks just turned Brock Purdy over a ton. The Niners never got anything going on offense. They completely got dominated in the field position game. The Seahawks defense just completely locked this offense down, which is exactly what they did a few weeks ago when they played in the regular season. So no surprise there. And then the Seahawks were able to just have better starts to drives that meant that no matter how well or how poorly Sam Darnold could have played, they were still going to put up points in this game. Obviously, that last game they played was 13-3. So it's not like they did too much on offense. But in this game, things were humming a little bit better, just a little bit cleaner enough to just take all of those turnovers, all the good field position starts, and make them touchdown after touchdown after touchdown. Which led to an easy win for the Seahawks, but things were not as easy for the Los Angeles Rams, who went on the road, beat the Bears in the frigid Chicago weather, 20-17 in overtime. Obviously, story of the game was the Bears doing Bears-like things, where Caleb Williams on a fourth down play that was do or die at the end of the game just heaved one up, and of course Cole Kmet was there to catch it. This is because Kmet's in the game because Loveland got injured earlier in the game. I mean, there's so many things that could have gone wrong for the Bears and did go wrong at different points. They threw an interception right at the 50-yard line. The Rams could have cashed in and won this game in regulation a lot easier. But Williams takes the Bears on that drive at the end of the game to get them into range to tie it, and then obviously they have the fourth down and they pull out another miracle. I mean, look, this season was a magical, magical season for Chicago. I don't think anybody thought they'd end up on top of this division, and here they were, a few plays away from the NFC Championship game. Frankly, they got the stop they needed. They got the Rams off the field in overtime to start with. The Rams three and outed and punted, but then Caleb Williams threw an interception looking for DJ Moore deep down the field. I think, you know, they needed 15 yards really to get in field goal range and then kick what would have been a game-winning field goal, or at least have the chance to kick a game-winning field goal should they make that decision. Of course, the interception meant that never happened. The Rams drove down the field, got a field goal of their own, and won this game 20-17 in overtime, which sets up the Seahawks and the Rams in the NFC Championship game. I talked about it last week. This is the game that we've been looking forward to every single time they've played this season, first of all. And second of all, since the playoff bracket kind of settled in, you know, was this going to be a second round matchup? Was it going to, or a divisional round matchup? Was it going to be the NFC Championship game? Everybody was excited to find out. I think the NFL is probably pretty happy that this ended up being the NFC Championship game, because I think, like I said, this was the matchup of the two best teams in the NFC all season long. And I think that there's a reason these teams are here. There's a reason that the Rams were able to go on the road twice and get wins over teams that were scrappy and young. There's a reason why the Seahawks dominated the 49ers and a reason why they had the bye in the first place. So it's going to be a really, really close game again. I mean, the last game was a one-point overtime win for the Seahawks. The game before that was a two-point regulation win for the Rams. I have no idea where to go in this game, but I think going with the home field advantage is probably the right thing to do, despite my status as a Rams fan. I don't feel horrible about this week. Speaking from a fan's perspective, not an analyst perspective for a second, I don't feel horrible about this week. I don't think that the Rams are going to get blown out, but I also can't say that I'm ridiculously confident in them winning either. I think I was definitely more, a lot more confident in them beating the Panthers, and definitely comfortably more confident in them beating the Bears. It's just hard to go on the road three times in a row in the playoffs and win all three games, especially when one of the teams knows you this well. So I'm going to pick the Seahawks in a close one. I'm going to say this is like a 28-24 game, you know, relatively high scoring, maybe might even go higher than that, depending on what version of the Rams defense comes out in this game. But this is going to be a really, really good game, and it's going to set up an entertaining Super Bowl no matter what. Although I think, no offense to the Broncos, I think a lot of people are just hoping that it's the Seahawks and the Patriots and not, or the Rams and the Patriots and not Jared Stidham against that Seahawks defense, because we have seen what this defense does to backup quarterbacks. It is not pretty. But that's it for the NFL. Let's move on to recap of the last week of action in the NBA. Of course, starting in the Eastern Conference, as always, where it's the Detroit Pistons who are currently leading things. I mean, the Pistons, obviously, we all know, have had a great season. They're continuing that. They're 5.5 games ahead of the Celtics after winning their last three games. The Celtics, in second place, are 26-16. The Knicks are 1.5 games back in the Celtics. They are 25-18. They've lost 4 in a row, though, 2-8 in their last 10. So, bit of a midseason slump. A bit is an understatement. A big, big, big midseason slump for New York. Meanwhile, you have the Raptors at 25-19, a half game back of the Knicks. The 76ers, who are a half game back of the Raptors. They've, of course, been playing some pretty good basketball, getting healthier, and that's really the most important thing for them, is just to stay healthy all season long. You have the Magic, who are 1.5 of a game behind the Sixers, so all four of those teams from 3-6 separated by just 1.5 total games, a half game in between each team. And then, of course, guess what? It's not just 3-6, it's 3-7 that's separated by that margin. That's because the Cavs are 24-20. They're tied with the Magic for that 6th and 7th seed, obviously. Big difference with that tiebreaker of playing in the play-in bracket versus knowing who you're playing as the 3 seed early on. And then, of course, you have the 3 play-in buds. They're always here. The Heat, the Bulls, and the Hawks. The Heat at the top of that bunch at 22-21. Bulls next up at 20-22. And the Hawks at 20-25 to round out the playoff picture. Then you have the Bucks, who are just a half of a game behind the Hawks. The Hawks have lost 4 in a row. The Bucks obviously getting Giannis back, playing a little bit better recently. They're at 18-24. The Hornets are 16-27, which is somehow only 3 games out of a playoff spot, but don't really expect them to be factoring into that too much, but I guess you never know, they might. Then you have the Nets at 12-29, the Wizards at 10-32, and the worst record in the East are the Indiana Pacers. Despite the fact that the Wizards have lost 7 in a row, they're still better than the Pacers overall this season. But moving on to the Western Conference, it's of course, surprise, surprise, the Oklahoma City Thunder in first place. Although now their lead over second place is actually the same amount of games as the Pistons' lead is over the Celtics, despite the fact that the Thunder were off to such an amazing start to the year. They've obviously cooled off a little bit. They're still 36-8, though. It's still a pretty ridiculous mark, but nowhere near the win record pace that they were on towards the beginning of the season. But the Spurs have held firm. They're still at second in the standings. They're 30-13. The Nuggets, despite Nikola Jokic being out for a while, they're just one game back of that second seed. They are 29-14. The Timberwolves have surged their way up to the standings to the fourth spot. The Rockets, a half game back of the Timberwolves at 25-15. The Lakers, just a half game behind them at 25-16, and they're tied with the Phoenix Suns, who were 26-17, 7-3 in their last 10. Again, same thing as the East. The sixth and seventh spots in the standings are tied. So very interesting. Obviously, as we reach closer to the halfway, pretty much at the halfway point of the season, actually, depending on what records you're looking at. But obviously, we have all-star starters and everything, which means we're there. We are at that halfway point. Obviously, the all-star break is in the second half of the season for sure. But it's interesting to see where all the teams stack up halfway through the year. It's a good time marker. And then right behind the Suns, you have, I'll stop rambling. Right behind the Suns, you have the Warriors at 25-19. They have won four in a row. They're 7-3 in their last 10. Really, all the play-in teams are hot right now. The Clippers and the Blazers as well. The Blazers at 22-22. They've won three in a row. They're 8-2 in their last 10. They're still three games behind the Warriors. So significantly in a deficit to those better teams in the West. But guess what? The Clippers, after all that, they are in the playoff. They have lost, they have won, excuse me, six games in a row. They're 8-2 in their last 10. So obviously they were 13-23, and now they're all the way up here at number 10 in the play-in bracket. It's pretty insane. The Grizzlies now half of a game behind the Clippers. Then you have the Mavericks, who are 1.5 games behind the Grizzlies, out of the picture though, really, if we're going to be honest. The Jazz 14-29, 3.5 games back. The Kings 12-31, 2 games back of the Jazz, and then the Pelicans at 10-35 in last place in the West. But of course, we'll talk about the NBA again next week. Maybe more discussion on the All-Stars. I think I want to get into that a little bit, but honestly haven't done a ton of looking into that, to be honest with you, for the moment. But to cap off the podcast, of course, it's time to talk about college basketball, where we'll start in the Big Ten. Number 12, Michigan State beat Indiana 81-60. Number 16, Virginia beat number 20, Louisville 79-70. That's a road win for Virginia. They probably had the best week out of anybody in the country, you could argue. Maybe better than them was Kansas, who beat Iowa State in probably one of the bigger, probably the biggest, well, maybe second biggest upset of the year. Obviously, Kansas winning at the Fog against Iowa State is a little bit more likely than Wisconsin beating Michigan in Chrysler, but still, we're splitting hairs here. This is, you know, the number two team in the AP poll going down for the second week in a row. If that trend continues, it will be UConn's loss this week. Don't think it will continue, but you never know. And speaking of UConn, they edged out a win against number 25 Seton Hall, 69-64, in midweek action. Staying with those Tuesday night games, number 24 Tennessee beat A&M 87-82 in double overtime. A&M, I think, is a straight up better team than Tennessee. I think Tennessee got lucky to escape this game, and they were at home. But A&M did a few things that really allowed Tennessee to win this one. I think this was more of an A&M lost this game than Tennessee won this game type of situation. So, as painful as that sounds, I think it's pretty true. And then for the Wednesday action, number four Michigan went on the road, beat Washington 82-72. Obviously, those West Coast swings a little bit dangerous. You never know what might happen with those Big Ten teams out west. Then you have number five Purdue, who beat Iowa 79-72, a close one at home. Ole Miss beat number 21 Georgia 97-95 in overtime, an overtime win for the Rebels. Obviously, they were a preseason tournament team, or at least a tournament caliber team, according to most. And they have looked terrible to start the season, but Maybe they've started to figure things out. Maybe they're rounding a corner. This win could mean a lot for them going forward. Georgia rebounded later in the week, and we'll talk about that in a second. But Ole Miss putting that good win on the board. Then Texas finally knocking Vanderbilt from the ranks of the unbeaten. I say finally. I'm not wishing harm on Vanderbilt or wishing that they lose games, but it had been a while. They hadn't lost yet, but they're still number 10 in the AP poll. Texas beat them by 16, though, at home. For a massive upset and a massive game in terms of Texas tournament chances, because this is again another team like Ole Miss that was kind of on the bubble-ish, close to tournament contention before the season. Probably a little bit lower than Ole Miss in all honesty, but this is a big game. This is a big, big, big win to get them on the board, get them a signature win that will be important when evaluating teams on the bubble. And frankly, it is still early in the year, but not a lot of teams have signature wins down there in the bubble. A lot of them, frankly, have no quad one wins at all. And that has been kind of a sticking point this year. There's still a lot of time, and obviously, conference play is where teams start to accumulate those at higher numbers. But Texas desperately needed a signature victory, and I think they got one over the course of the week with that win. Then you have Stanford. They beat number 14 North Carolina 95-90. It's been a rough few days for North Carolina, and we'll obviously. They lost to Cal later, I think. But they've just, they've been up and down throughout the season. I don't think that this was who they are necessarily, but I also don't think that they're going to be a team that's going to shock the world in the tournament. But Stanford needs signature wins of their own. They have that win over Louisville. Now they have the one over North Carolina, looking to vault themselves into the tournament picture. Number one, Arizona beat Arizona State 89-82. It's a big win for the Wildcats, even though. A lot closer than they probably expected, but that's what happens in conference play. Same thing happened to BYU. They beat TCU 76-70 at home. Moving on to the weekend, Kansas beat Baylor 80-62. A big statement victory for Kansas to follow up that Iowa State win and say, that was not a fluke. This is who we are. Especially when we're fully healthy and Darren Peterson is playing, which he was in this game. Had 20 points on 8 of 10 shooting in the first half alone. So, Kansas. They're a lot better when Darren Peterson is playing, and I think that's a no-brainer, but the difference is probably even more than you would think. Even knowing how good Peterson is, it just feels like an entirely different team when he's out there. Then you have number 8 Nebraska. They beat Northwestern 77-58. They also hammered Oregon earlier in the week, but didn't need to mention both of those games. You just need to know that the Cornhuskers are still undefeated. Joining Arizona and then also Miami of Ohio, who got ranked this week, as the only undefeated teams left in the country. Then you have number 16 Virginia. They beat SMU 72-68. Kentucky beat number 24 Tennessee 80-78 on the road. Kentucky badly needed a signature win as well. This one maybe not quite a signature win because I don't think Tennessee's that good, as I stated earlier, but still a good win, a big one on the road. It's going to stay a quad one win. Tennessee's not dropping from the top 75 in the net, regardless of if I think they're, a second weekend contender or not. That's a different story. But Kentucky getting a win over a tournament team, and it was on the road. So that's a very hard thing to do, very important for their resume. Then you have Butler. You have really a slew of upsets here. Butler beat number 25 Seton Hall 77-66. Cincinnati beat number 2 Iowa State 79-70. Number 19 Florida beat number 10 Vanderbilt on the road 98-94. Obviously, Florida now reasserting themselves as the top team in the SEC. That there was a void up there to start the conference season, and the Gators have very quickly closed that distance and claimed that title for themselves. For a while, it looked like Vanderbilt with a decent sized gap between them and the next team, whether you thought that was Florida, Alabama, Arkansas, Tennessee, Kentucky. I mean, there's so Georgia, Missouri, there's so many contenders for that spot. But the reality is Florida with those two wins that they picked up this week, they look like the top team. I think, Missouri has that 2-point win over Florida, and other than that, they have looked completely unstoppable in conference play. And they're going to lose a game or two. They're not going to go. They're not going to run the table or anything in conference play. But I think they are still very clearly the favorites right now, especially after winning that game. But then you've number 22 Clemson, who beat Miami 69-59, a good win for the Tigers, who are just the mark of consistency in the ACC. Grand Canyon beat number 23 Utah State 84-74. So Grand Canyon getting an important win. They could be a bubble team. So who knows? That win might be very important later in the year. But Utah State suffering their first conference loss of the season. Then you have number 21 Georgia, who beat number 17 Arkansas 90-76, as we mentioned in weekend predictions. A big win for the Bulldogs. They continue to kind of alternate wins and losses in conference play after a pretty solid run in non-conference play, even though they didn't really play many good teams. But number 15 Texas Tech, they beat BYU 84-71. BYU hadn't lost in a long time. I think November was when they lost to UConn, so it had been a while. But Texas Tech able to knock them off at home. That was a really, really good game, really, really close one at home for the Red Raiders. And then finally, to end the week, number 7 Houston just demolished Arizona State 103-73. I'm talking about this because this team was the number one team in the country preseason, at least arguably. They have lost one game all season, and it was a close one late to Tennessee where they were down by, I think, 2 with 10 seconds left, or even 1 point with 10 seconds left. They had a chance to tie the game, send it to overtime. This team could be undefeated had they obviously pulled that one out, or had something not gone Tennessee's way in that game. It feels like no one's talking about them, even though they only have one loss, and this is still the number one team in the country from the preseason, according to a few people, depending on who you ask, of course. They need to be talked about more because they've dominated every single game, really, for the last month or so, and I don't see that stopping anytime soon. This team is going to keep climbing, although it's interesting because their next game, if you want to see what you're made of, how about you go on the road and play one of the top teams in your conference? They have Texas Tech on the road this weekend. So that will be an incredible game. And of course, we'll talk about it next week. But that means that for now, that wraps this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, January 27th, where we will once again talk about my weekend predictions, review conference championship weekend in the NFL, and have our weekly review of the NBA and college basketball action. In the meantime, please be sure to check out my picks for next weekend's games, which will be posted as always on Thursday, and might include some Australian Open content, which might lead into some podcast content about the Open, and then also my College Hoops Bracketology updates, which come out every Monday. All of that is on our social media handles at 4th and 24. That's the number 4, THAND, plus the number 24. Thank you for listening.